This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. This is episode 218 of the show. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site, with my co-host, Seth Cox, from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and we have nearly have a coaching staff. We've got a coach, we've got a coordinator, a couple of coordinators. We don't have an offensive coordinator, but we do have a mentor on staff to do that. And that's what we're going to talk about in the show tonight, recording on a Tuesday night as we normally do. And we're going to talk about the coaching staff that the Cardinals have put together. Though as of yet, it is not fully announced. There is not a full staff in place. So, but it's kind of interesting, Seth, as we've been talking. We basically had a show before the show, pretty much, as we talked about a number of topics, just how this offseason and the way the Cardinals are putting things together is really quite interesting, is it not?
It is, and it's exciting. I mean, we talked about Cliff Kingsbury a couple of weeks ago and what he's going to bring, but it's a different way of approaching a coaching staff and regime than what they did last year, even what they did under Arians, where a lot of those hires were Arians guys. This is a new and different approach, and let's see how it goes.
And so with this show, what we're going to talk about tonight is we're going to run down the list of the hires that we know of. We're going to talk about the decision not to go with an official offensive coordinator. We're going to discuss, why in the world did they go do through all of these interviews and not end up with anyone? Talk about the other offensive staff left. We're going to talk about Vance Joseph and the defensive staff and the reaction to that. And as well, we're going to talk about special teams. Jeff Rogers returns why don't the Cardinals have a full staff yet? That's all coming up on this this edition of the show, number 218, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's kind of run down what we know about the Cardinals coaching staff thus far. They have most of an offensive staff put together, a part of an offensive staff put together, part of a defensive staff put together. We know that Cliff Kingsbury is coach. There is no offensive coordinator. Technically, they did hire longtime assistant Tom Clements, most recently with the Green Bay Packers, was there for about a decade. He will act as the QB coach and passing game coordinator and will do some of the things that an offensive coordinator does, but they will not have an offensive coordinator in title. In terms of positions at receivers, they've got David Rye, a guy from the Packers. They brought in James Saxon for their running backs coach, formerly of the Steelers. Can talk about some of the impressive feats and numbers that he's got over his career. Sean Coogler, offensive line coach, most recently with the Broncos, previously with the Steelers. Then you've got tight ends coach. I'm kind of intrigued by this guy, Steve Heiden, because he now is on his third staff. He was on, he was a holdover from Wisenhunt. He was an Arians guy. He was an Arians, Wilkes, and now Kingsbury as he takes over for tight ends. They've got an assistant, Billy Natkins, for the assistant offensive line coach. And then we go over the defensive side of the ball. And Vance Joseph is defensive coordinator. We don't have word yet of a defensive line coach, but the return of Billy Davis, the former defensive coordinator of the Cardinals back when at the Ken Wisenhunt days, he returns as a linebackers coach. They've brought in a couple of guys from Vance Joseph's staff in Denver, Marcus Robertson, and I can't remember the name of the other guy off the top of my head. Greg Williams, not that Greg Williams, but a different Greg Williams to coach the secondary and the cornerbacks. And then we move over to special teams, and what we do get back is Jeff Rogers, who was the special teams coordinator a year ago. did a good job there. They decided to keep him on. That's what we know. And obviously there are a few positions. We don't know who the strength and conditioning guy is going to be. We don't know defensive line coach. We don't know if there's going to be an assistant head coach title. Run game coordinator still is technically not there. Offensive and defensive quality control, whatever assistants are going to be somewhere on there. It looks like it might be a leaner staff than the Cardinals have had the past few years. Let's talk about first now. We're going to talk about specifically Tom Clements, how he ended up with the job, how he fits. And but why in the world are they not going with, why do they not have an offensive coordinator after it seemed like they interviewed a quarter of the league to find an offensive coordinator?
Everybody.
I mean, heck, they even interviewed Hugh Jackson, for crying out loud. Which
I thought there was going to be a revolt. That was the maddest I've ever seen anybody or any of our fans. It was kind of crazy.
Well, especially the timing. Because I did write a post, because when the Cowboys fired Scott Linehan, I put it out there. I said, hey, you know who would actually be perfect for the Cardinal staff would be Scott Linehan. Everyone's like, no, blah, yeah, Cowboys, terrible, everything. And then the Hugh Jackson news came out, and then it was like, oh, maybe yeah. Okay, that there is a worse guy, but
yeah. And Jess was like, how do you like me now?
he was never under consideration. It was just that the Cowboys fired him, and based on what the Cardinals were looking for, was a guy who's experienced, who's had success, has maybe some head coaching experience. Scott Linehan checked all the boxes. Now, he probably never was interested in the job to begin with, but so that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, and you look at the hires and what they did. I think when you look at the staff in general, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, you ran down the list, but let's just, you know, we'll start on defense because that's kind of easier right now. So, you know, you got Vance Joseph. He's the defense coordinator. 1 year DC in Miami, 2 year head coach in Denver. Not super successful in either stops, but he was, you know, very successful in San Francisco under Vic Fangio for a little bit under Mike Singletary for a little bit. And then he was in Houston with Romeo Crennel and Wade Phillips for a little bit. And then he was in Cincy. And as much as people don't like Marvin Lewis, they did a nice job there under Mike Zimmer. So when you look at the names that he's coached under, you know, Mike Nolan, Mike Singletary, Romeo Crennel and all these guys, those are good names, right? Like, so he's got some chops on him from a who he's coached under standpoint. The thing is, and what makes sense the most, I would say, with this is that they hired a guy in Vance Joseph who is an a defensive coordinator and a guy with a background as a head coach, obviously, that can kind of run the defensive side of the ball and be the guy that handles the defensive portions of that. But he can also be kind of a sounding board for Cliff Kingsbury and a guy that will take the pressure off of Cliff on the defensive side of the ball. You and I talked about a little bit before the show. It is, in essence, the Wade Phillips ideal, right? Like, oh, let's hire Wade, who's super successful and been around forever, to be the DC for this new guy in Sean McVay. The slight difference, and I'm saying that kind of, you know, half joking, is that Wade Phillips has been around since before even Jess was born. I mean, this guy has literally been a defensive coordinator since 1981. He's been a head coach or defensive coordinator for the last 38 years. So Vance Joseph is 46. So there, that's the difference. Like,
well, the same thing with the Bears a year ago, like we were talking off the air. If you kind of look at it, it looks like the Cardinals are trying to mimic the Rams and the Bears. The difference being Vic Fangio is like Wade Phillips.
Right. Been a defensive coordinator for 20 years, been around the game for a long time, you know, kind of helped Harbaugh in San Francisco write that ship and everything. So the difference is this to me is that it seems like, and I don't want anybody to take this the wrong way. I really don't. It seems like on the surface, they're basically saying, hey, Vance, you're the head coach of the defense. Build your staff as you see fit. I mean, they brought in, like you said, Greg Williams. They, you know, Bill Davis is kind of the wild card that we'll talk about. You know, what, you know, we'll start to hypothesize what does hiring Bill Davis, the former Ohio State University linebacker coach, mean for the draft day scenario? But, you know, when you look at it from that, like, a lot of it is, hey, Vance, assemble your staff on defense, which is really kind of unheard of, right? Like, usually it's, you know, the whole story of McVay in with the Rams was always that when he came in and he had his staff built that included Wade Phillips, but it was still his staff. This is clearly not what happened with Cliff Kingsbury. And again, we're not saying this is a negative. Jess and I are, no, we're not saying that, but we're splicing out how this is kind of it, that it's not kind of, it is a different situation in that Cliff was hired and then they started to build the staff and they started to find a staff together. He and Steve Keim and Michael Bidwell. And a lot of that is because I think it was, hey, like, you do the offense, Cliff. Like, that's what you're here for. You're here for Josh Rosen. You're here to fix this offense, which was literally the worst in the NFL. And by the way, I'm going to find you a defensive guy. I'm going to find you a guy that can take the burden of the defense, especially for a 39-year-old first-time NFL head coach, and kind of unburden you for a season or two. Because guess what? If Vance is successful, if the Cardinals are successful in general, but Vance is successful, if he has the Cardinals in the top 14 defensively, guess what's going to happen in 2020 and likely in 2021, he'll be gone. So that's what this whole thing is it's slightly different because, you know, Wade Phillips isn't going anywhere. He's going to retire once he's done. Like, he's done and he's going to retire. And then you have, you know, same, you know, Fangio was there and they kept Fangio on when they brought in Matt Nagy, and now Fangio's gone. So, you know, it's the same type of situation. Like, they went about it in a different manner.
It's almost, and I'm going to, we talked about this before the show. This reminds me of the movie Remember the Titans. And yes, we've got the young head coach, and then you've got the guy who's just basically just Coach Yost, just coach your defense. And that's kind of how the Cardinals have this set up. Vance Joseph is in charge of that defense. And you know what? I'm really kind of interested in this is seemingly what they did with Steve Wilks last year when they added Mike McCoy, in a way, because that's kind of how, now obviously Wilks had his hand in when it came to the offense, but ultimately that offense was all about Mike McCoy. That's going to be this year. I think Vance Joseph is not a bad hire at all.
No, I'm okay with
especially the Cardinals really limited them. Let's be honest. The Cardinals really backed themselves into a corner when they made it very clear they're going to a 3-4 defense because clearly they had success with it under Bruce Arians. Therefore, we must be a 3-4 team no matter what. So we were good as a 3-4 team. Last year, we were bad as a 4-3 team. So clearly the reason why we were bad is because we weren't 3-4. And so they really did paint themselves into a corner because, you know, you're going to run across defensive coordinators. Guys are either 4-3 or 3-4. You rarely come across a coach who is truly hybrid. We saw Mike Nolan as a name that came up. Mike Nolan, really his only year that he was bad as a defensive coordinator happened to be the 1 year in Atlanta when he stuck to the 4-3 personnel that they had. They were bad. He's a 3-4 coach. They played a 4-3. He was flexible, and they were bad, and he was fired. So, and then you had Todd Bowles was gone because once BA joined the coaching ranks again, you knew that Bowles was going there. Vic Fangio became a head coach, which means Chuck Pagano, then he was the name that kept coming up for the Cardinals as a good DC possibility. He ends up and goes and takes the Bears job. What were they going to go get Rex Ryan?
Right. Well, and that was just, you and I talked about this. This is off the air, but this is, let's be honest. This was a hard sell. This is we're taking a risk here. Do you want to come on board and stake your name to this or not? And I think for a guy like Pagano, if you just look at the two situations, a team that finished third in the NFC or the team with the first pick, who are you going to pick? Who do you take in that case? Like you said, their options were semi-limited, and I think that they took the guy that fit what they needed, and what they needed was experience. And while Joseph's experience is not as vast as the names that we had heard of the Paganos and the Mike Nolans and the Todd Bowles, he still has experience as a DC and he has experience as a head coach. Those are important things. So, in the end, when the staff is assembled and they get the defensive line coach and they get the defensive quality control coach and whatever other positions they have to hire, it'll look, I think, a lot like Vance Joseph head coaching staff or team, as opposed to Vance Joseph, the defensive coordinator team, which, again, I don't think that's a problem. I really don't, because I think to get a name like Vance, to get a guy like Vance who has been in the league and is a hotter commodity. You and I were talking about it off the air. Steve Wilkes got a job.
Yes, he did.
He got a defensive coordinator job right away. He didn't even have to wait. So
with a team that is expected to be good next year in the Cleveland Browns.
Right. And so when you look at it from this, Vance Joseph was going to get a job somewhere. He was going to be a name for someone, maybe Cincinnati, obviously not go. Well, he could have gone back to Miami. So, but the other thing we knew was this: Matt Rhule turned down the Jets job because he was being dictated who his staff was going to be. I think I said on the show, but I could be wrong, but I was told that part of the reason that Kingsbury chose Arizona, maybe over New York, was because of similar situations. And it wasn't this idea of like, oh, I don't want to say, but I mean, Greg Williams was the defensive coordinator in New York the minute he was not the head coach in Cleveland, right? Like that was a done deal. And so
that would have been disastrous for a new guy like Kingsbury.
Right. And so that was the whole thing. Rule and Kingsbury were looking at, like, I don't know if that's how I want to, you know, do things in my first go at this level. So, and then when you look at the offensive side, I think Kugler and what's his name again? Natkin. I think that those guys have more to do with it than what, or that Kingsbury has more to do with it than what people really know. So
let's hold off on the offense, but let's get back a little bit of the defense, talking about the staff. Billy Davis, we both talked about this. So we got the Vance Joseph in place. Hopefully he does Vance Joseph and gets this defense back to respectability, something the Cardinals fans are used to at this point. Billy Davis is an interesting hire because he's a guy who got fired before. He was the defensive coordinator for the Cardinals under Ken Wisenhunt. But what's interesting is the connection that he has from college, because he comes straight out of Ohio State as a linebackers coach there. Doesn't that sort of signal, because the Cardinals have the number one pick in the draft, the number one guy on a few draft boards right now is defensive end Nick Bosa out of Ohio State. What does this tell you? I see one of two things moving forward, but what do you think this signals with the Cardinals landing Davis back on the staff?
I think it's twofold. Is that they, one, are obviously looking for as much insight as they can into Nick Bosa, the mind, what makes Nick Bosa the person tick, before they make that call on draft day. The other thing is, when you look at it, is that, you know, Ohio State's going to have a number of players, not just Bosa, drafted in this draft, you know, a number of players drafted in the top 100. And so Davis will have some insight into a lot of potential Arizona Cardinals draft picks if that's a way they want to go. I think the other thing is that it's not like, I mean, obviously the Cardinals let him go, but it's not like Davis just went away for years and then and is just now resurfacing. You know, the way the 3-4 kind of works is that they run their, you know, coaches coach in the sense of there's a inside linebacker coach and an outside linebacker coach. And so obviously the Cardinals don't have the outside linebacker coach yet, or the pass rush coach yet, but you know, Davis is being tabbed as the linebacker coach, so you wonder if that has more to do with the inside linebackers than the outside linebackers.
I think from his time in Pittsburgh, because he was a Pittsburgh guy before he came over the first time, I think he probably will be charged more with the inside backers, I think, I would guess. But what I think is I think having Davis on the staff tells us everything we need to know. So what happens with that very first pick, assuming they don't trade it away, that's a discussion for a completely different show, which we will have, the decision of to trade or not to trade that pick, is one. Having a coach that was on that defensive staff will either cement Bosa as the kind of the obvious number one overall pick, or it'll tell us everything we need to know about the concerns there are about him if he's not taken over number one overall, because Davis is intimately familiar with Bosa as a player and as a person, even though he wasn't part of his room.
Yeah.
He wasn't part of his room, but obviously he would know everything there is to know about Bosa as the player, his strengths, his weaknesses, which tells you if they don't draft him, then there are real concerns that people have, or he just really views someone like, say, Josh Allen as just absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. And so when you look at the Davis insight and everything, you look at it from the sense of he's been on that staff. He's been around the Bosas in general, and there are concerns. I mean, I heard it on Arizona Sports with Ron Wolfley and Max Starks, and both of them are advocating against drafting Nick Bosa because they are concerned more with the Bosa name than they are the player and you know the concerns that come with that. So a guy like Davis that's been at, you know, in Columbus for two seasons. Obviously Bosa's biggest season was 2017 and has, you know, been around him in that sense. I think it makes sense that they would want to, you know, bring him in and really just, I mean, you can say, oh, well, why would they do that for the first pick? Well, let's be completely honest. They have to nail this pick. Like, they can't screw this up at all.
They already look like the Browns. They F up this top pick. They will be the Browns.
Right. And so, I mean, everybody that's lamented the choosing of Cliff Kingsbury and everything else. Yeah, I mean, it's just you bring in a guy, and maybe he's only here a year or two. But if it helps you get the pick right, if it's Nick Bosa, and he's very comfortable with that, you know, who Bosa is and the pick of Bosa, then you can't really complain about that if he's just here a year or two, right?
Right. Right. And with that, we'll move on to we'll go back to the offensive side of the ball. We're going to talk about Tom Clements, why they don't have an offensive coordinator, before we move on to talk about some other things. That's coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We changed gears a little bit and ended up going defense to start off, even though the most recent hiring was of Tom Clements as their non-offensive coordinator now called. He's not the offensive coordinator, and he's not the assistant head coach. He's the QB coach and passing game coordinator, but appears to be, as of right now, the kind of the linchpin of that entire offensive staff paired with Kingsbury. Would it appear that way to you?
Can you say that last part again, Jess? You cut out a little bit.
Oh, so it appears that with the hiring of Clements as their passing game coordinator, he is kind of the important coaching hire. He's the linchpin of that entire offensive staff for Kingsbury, even though he doesn't have the two, which would be, to me, the two most important titles of either assistant head coach or offensive coordinator.
Yeah, and I wrote about this a little bit. I didn't write a ton, but I wrote about it a little bit today when they officially announced that they had hired Tom Clements, is that this isn't just a Josh Rosen hire. While Kingsbury can be identified and looked at as a Josh Rosen hire, this is not just a Josh Rosen hire. When you look at it from this sense, this is a Josh Rosen and Cliff Kingsbury hire. This is a sounding board for Kingsbury. This is a guy that has been there and done that and done it a lot in the NFL. And so Clements gives Kingsbury kind of a shoulder to lean on, so to speak, in terms of offensive understanding and how to cultivate an offensive game plan for a team like that has been, you know, or has been successful like the Green Bay Packers have, and help kind of bridge the air raid college versus the kind of Mike McCarthy West Coast vertical, you know, offensive schemes that they do. So that's what Clements should give him, you know, from the jump, is a guy that's been there, done that, and has been very successful. He was, you know, I don't know the ins and outs of the Green Bay anatomy coaching wise under McCarthy, like who was actually calling the plays and things of that nature.
Clements was for a little bit till McCarthy got bored and wanted to call plays again.
Well, and that doesn't, I mean, that's one of the, it's kind of like the Chiefs thing. Like, it doesn't bother me that Matt Nagy didn't call plays. It doesn't bother me that Eric Bieniemy didn't call plays. But so I, you know, you always want to be careful, but when you look at it, Clement was the head coach, or the head coach, excuse me, pardon me, the offensive coordinator when Aaron Rodgers won the MVP. You know, when he threw 38 touchdowns and you know, had 112 passer rating and things of that nature. So, you know, he's helped call plays, or at least we know for a fact, create game plans for an MVP winning quarterback. So his work with quarterbacks is unquestioned to begin with. I mean, I think I saw the stat. It's something insane. Like
here's the numbers. I was counting just as a QB coach, and offensive coordinator. So I did not include when he was assistant head coach the last 2 years in Green Bay, but four different quarterbacks have been a Pro Bowl as four different quarterbacks have been Pro Bowlers a combined five times. One was a Pro Bowl. And then as an offensive coordinator under Green Bay, then you added another when he was offensive coordinator, he was a Aaron Rodgers was a Pro Bowler and an All Pro once. Between QB coach and offensive coordinator, seven Pro Bowls, two All Pro seasons, and that's from four different quarterbacks. Let's go through this. This isn't just Aaron Rodgers. We're talking Elvis Gerback, Cordell Stewart. And then you add to that, you got the last kind of really good Brett Favre year. In that last year in Green Bay. So you've got Elvis Gerback, Cordell Stewart, Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, Tommy Maddox was comeback player of the year. Kelly Holcomb started eight games for him, set a franchise record for completion percentage. He's really done some really nice things.
Yeah. And the ones that impress you, and so let's, you know, boo me on Twitter as much as you want, but the things that he's done with guys like Elvis Gerback, Cordell Stewart, Tommy Maddox, Kelly Holcomb, those, in my opinion, matter more than what he did with Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, because Favre and Rodgers have abilities that the other four just don't have. Right. Yeah. Like those guys were good before and after. Now, like Jess said, and I think this was even said, that Brett Favre had his best statistical season under Clement's tutelage when he was the quarterback coach. Obviously, like I said, Aaron Rodgers had his MVP season when Clements was the offensive coordinator. So if somebody's going to get something out of Rosen. It could be Tom Clements because he's had success with guys that are more journeyman and backup types. I mean, just read it off. I mean, Cordell Stewart, Elvis Gerback, Kelly Holcomb, Tommy Maddox, all winning NFL awards. That's stupid, right? Those aren't good quarterbacks. And so if he's taking great quarterbacks and raising their level of play to the best of their career, and then he's taking journeyman kind of veteran backup guys and raising their level of play to Pro Bowl level of play. Okay. So this is a guy that if Rosen's going to be, you know, a journeyman, he can at least pull him up. If Rosen's going to be good, he can maybe pull him up even more. If Rosen's going to be great, he can pull him up even more. That's the way I look at the Clements hire, is that, you know, you're not looking at a guy that's, this isn't, and I'm not trying to take a pot shot, this isn't BA, who's had first overall picks and then thrived, right? This is a guy that's taken chicken crap and made chicken salad.
yeah, it really is. It really is. And with that, let's move on to the next segment of the show. On the next segment of the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Why did the Cardinals not actually hire an offensive coordinator? And why did they go through all the work to hire one if they weren't ultimately going to hire one? That's next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast. So they got Clements as their guy. But now after they interviewed, it seemed like everyone. So first was Jake Spavital, Texas State guy connected to Cliff Kingsbury. Then it was Ben McAdoo. Then it was John DeFilippo. Then it was Steve Sarkisian. Then it was whoever else. And then they talked to Clements and they talked to Hugh Jackson. And in the end, after all those, and they were all reported as interviews for the offensive coordinator vacancy, they don't hire an offensive coordinator. Why in the world would they not do that? Will it work? And why was it so hard to, why did they go through all of that process if they ultimately weren't going to hire one?
Well, I think this is a twofold idea. One, we talked about, Vance Joseph, right? And like what you sold Vance Joseph, hey, you're the head coach on the defensive side of the ball. We're going to give you X, Y, and Z. You know, we're going to do X, Y, and Z for you. We're going to get you this, that, and the other, right? So all of that. Guess what was not said for the offensive coordinator position? All of that. Like, hey, guess what, buddy? You're going to come in, you're going to help Cliff get the game plans together. You're going to help Cliff, you know, on game day, being a spotter, saying, hey, this looks like it's open, that looks like it's open, this isn't working, yada, yada, yada. You know what you won't be doing? Calling plays. So right away, a guy like, you know, John DeFilippo, you look at it and you go, okay, you can work in Arizona under Cliff Kingsbury, or you can go to Jacksonville and call plays. Well, this isn't a what's a better job situation. This is what gives me a chance to advance my career more realistically. And there's not really a choice there, right? Like, it's Jacksonville. You're going to call plays. If you're successful in Jacksonville as the offensive coordinator, guess who's going to be getting a job in 2020? It's going to be John DeFilippo. When you look at it from Steve Sarkisian, you know, the reports are out, kind of conflicting. I can tell you what I heard was similar to what the national reports were, and that was that the Cardinals offered Steve Sarkisian the job, and he decided that going back to Alabama and calling plays for what will probably be another two or three national championships made sense for him. And again, like, you, it's hard. It's hard for me, at least, to look at that and go, oh, that was a bad decision, or you know, the car, why wouldn't he want an NFL OC job? Well, it's an OC job in name only.
And it's a glorified, it would have been a glorified quarterback's coach.
Right. And this is the other reality of the situation and something that, you know, we have to, through the lens of everything, we have to understand. This is the Arizona Cardinals, the team with the first pick in the 2019 NFL draft, a team that set historic lows for offensive output and efficiency in 2018, and that is basically giving the offensive keys to the kingdom to Cliff Kingsbury. So, again, what offensive coordinator that has some establishment is going to come in and say, oh, yeah, I want that job. Oh yeah, I'd be happy to defer to a college head coach. So I think that's the situation more so than anything else at this point, is that it was just not a realistic thing to see a big name. And again, let's be honest, like, who was Matt LaFleur on Sean McVay's staff? It's not like Matt LaFleur was a guy that everybody knew. Like, everybody knew who Matt LaFleur was after he was on Sean McVay's staff. Nobody knew. I mean, Zach Taylor had a nondescript career, including a, you know, 8-game stint as an offensive coordinator in Miami. You know how many offensive coordinator jobs he had after that in Miami? None, because nobody wanted him. So sometimes it comes down to a coach has to create and identify his own talent and staff. And I think that's what the Cardinals, I think that's what Kingsbury wanted to do with Spadavol, or whatever, however you pronounce it, the guy, the Texas State head coach. I think Kingsbury legitimately wanted him. I think the Cardinals were willing to pursue him for Kingsbury, because it's a guy that Kingsbury trusted and yada, yada, yada. And I think it just didn't work out because he's the head coach of a college, major college program. And again, if you're going to start your NFL coaching career, do you really want it to be in this environment with this team at this juncture? So that's what it kind of boils down to, in my opinion, a lot of the reasons why they could not find an offensive coordinator.
Well, and let's, before we move forward, this is not completely unheard of. There are other teams. I know of at least one. The Houston Texans do not have a coach on their staff as an offensive coordinator. I know this because I was looking at, you know, as we were looking at candidates. So we go through, oh, a young guy worked with Deshaun Watson. Let's see who's on. Oh, wait, they don't have an, oh, Bill O'Brien is the de facto offensive coordinator. And then they've got guys under. So it's not completely unheard of. There are staffs where there technically is no offensive coordinator. It does happen. But to me, the odd thing is, in terms of coaching titles, the fact that Tom Clements didn't get the OC name, it does surprise me he was not named assistant head coach as well. Because for someone with no NFL experience at all at Kingsbury, I felt probably that whoever is assistant head coach would be very important to the staff. Maybe that's not going to be the case. But it's hard. It's a hard sell when you have, because let's be honest, Kingsbury has basically zero anything in terms of connections to staff around the NFL. So he's got no guys in the league. And any guys that he might have in the league are basically bottom of the staff, inexperienced guys like a David Rye, with whom he'd worked before. but they would all be promotion, almost in the same type of scenario as Steve Wilkes last year, because he ended up, for the guys on his staff, many of them were promotions from previous jobs. And so they were kind of first timers in the job that they had, at least in the pros. And so unless in the NFL, the coaching ranks, most of the jobs get filled by people who know people who know people. And in this case, Kingsbury doesn't have that pool right now. It's kind of an innovative. It's almost as excited as we both are about this hire. It does feel like kind of the way that the Cardinals are assembling a staff, it's almost as if they are admitting that Kingsbury might not be necessarily perfectly ready now to be an NFL head coach. And so they're buffering a lot of things. They're kind of like starting Josh Rosen last year. they were in a scenario where, well, their first plan didn't work out. So let's do it this way and try to put enough safeguards around him so he doesn't completely fail. And maybe he'll be successful.
Well, and so one of the things that I think is undersold in this whole thing is the hire of Sean Krugler, kind of a veteran journeyman offensive line coach throughout the NFL, but he was the head coach for the University of Texas El Paso Miners from I think it was 2013 to 2017. Now there wasn't a whole lot of success, so you know, don't get too crazy on this, but when you kind of read his philosophy and what he did there, his offensive coordinator for two seasons was a guy named Brian Natkin, who just happens to be the assistant offensive line coach for the Arizona Cardinals. So when we talk about run game coordinators and potential, you know, OC title type guys, the UTEP system, again, I don't want anybody to say or assume that I'm like saying that UTEP's this great program or anything like that. They did produce Aaron Jones, who's a very solid player for the Green Bay Packers, and Will Hernandez, who was a phenomenal draft pick for the New York Giants, both under Kugler and Natkin's tutelage, by the way. But their offensive scheme at UTEP was a spread power run game. So when you're looking at kind of the puzzle pieces, and you're looking at Cliff Kingsbury air raid offense. Okay, so we talked a little bit about the air raid last show. Definitely check that out on either Jess or I's site or just on iTunes. He has the time stamps there and everything. But so when you look at the air raid offense, and then you bring in Tom Clements, right, and you've got the Mike McCarthy tutelage, and you've got this kind of mix of West Coast offense. He's had time in, then he's had time in the vertical passing offense, kind of the Don Coryell, Bruce Arians. And now all of a sudden you've got these offensive line coaches, one being Krugler, who was successful at a number of stops and not only developing offensive linemen, but for creating a running scheme in Pittsburgh with like Rashard Mendenhall and under Bruce Arians. When you look at it from with Philip Lindsay under Vance Joseph, you know, and what they did, and you look at those two run games and how different they were, the contrast in the BA offense and running game, and then look at last season's Denver Broncos offense and running game, and then you look at Kugler's 4 years at UTEP and that offense and running game, which Natkin was a part of the entire time, 2 years as OC, and you kind of build this amalgamation of this is a guy that understands talent in the sense of the best way to deploy it in the run game to have a successful choreographed run offense.
What I find interesting about the Kugler signing as on the coaching staff, he's highly respected. In fact, TJ Humphries was thrilled. He was, I thought that had Arians not retired, he spent some time around the team in 2017, the second half of the year. I was told by this by a couple of people, and it's since come out. It looked like either had Bruce Arians still not retired, it looked like Larry Zierlein, their offensive line coach, was in any case, and that Kugler was very likely going to be their guy to target for 2018 if it had been Arians staying on. Obviously, they went with Ray Brown under Steve Wilks, and that didn't happen. But what's kind of interesting is kind of the amalgamation that we're going to have between philosophies, because from what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, kind of like the Texas Tech, Texas A&M offensive linemen have been more of your longer athletic, while Kugler is of the traditional big, strong. Are we going to see perhaps where we might see a little bit of perhaps, we're not going to see any disagreement, but it'll be kind of interesting to see what direction they go with their free agent signings and with the guys that they end up drafting. Because, you know, just a season ago, when they got Corey Cunningham, Mason Cole, Corey Cunningham seemed to be very much the Ray Brown type. Will a guy like Corey Cunningham, like he's a massive individual, but he's more the athletic part. Will there perhaps be a little bit of friction in terms of scheme and type of offensive type of body that they put on the offensive line that Kugler will want to coach?
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's what the question is how does Kingsbury's scheme and what he wants to do offensively mesh with what Kugler does? And I think the fact that Kugler's been successful in a number of different schemes is a big deal, because you look at just the variance from Pittsburgh to UTEP to Denver last year. Those were, you know, that's almost spans a decade, and you look at how those teams' offenses looked. You know, obviously we know when he was in Pittsburgh, it was a lot of high formation, it was a lot of single back stuff, it was a lot of two tight end stuff. You know, go to UTEP and they're running out of the spread, but they're running power concepts out of the spread. Something that we see, you know, if there's a great Google it if you're super interested. It's really dorky, but there's a great, you know, information on Gus Malzahn's power spread scheme at Auburn, and that's kind of similar to what UTEP did without obviously the SEC talent level there. So when you look at those type of things, and then you go to Denver last year and what they were doing, you look at it, he's shown flexibility. And so I don't know if it'll be up to Kugler to say, hey, like, these are the type of guys I want to mold, or it'll be Kugler to say, like, look, you can pick whoever you want, but make sure that they're all of the same skill set. Like, don't give me Andre Smith and then Justin Pugh, right? Like don't give me guys that succeed in different ways. Like, Pugh has long been better in pass protection than in the run game, and then Andre Smith probably would struggle to block Jess and I in pass protection. Now, you flop that, and Justin Pugh's not ever getting a ton of push in the run game, and Andre Smith just leans on Jess or I, and there's going to be, you know, we're both going to try not to die from under what happens to him. So, you know, that's the biggest thing, is you want to make sure all of it makes sense, and that he's creating, or that the Cardinals are giving him something to work with that makes sense and that flows together.
And with that, let's make to one final transition as we kind of talk about the rest of the offensive staff, the return of Jeff Rogers, and then, well, why in the world do we don't have a coaching staff, a full staff announced yet? That's coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's change gears a little bit and talk about the rest of the kind of the offensive staff we know of. Now, in terms of David Rye, I don't know much about him. This is kind of a promotion now for him. But the guy that I'm really intrigued about is James Saxon, their running backs coach that they landed. This should make David Johnson very excited. Ultimately, it was interesting because there were a couple of names that were floating around. Stump Mitchell. Stump Mitchell was reported to be in the mix for the running back's job. Did not take it. Ended up going up elsewhere, going up with Freddie Kitchens up in Cleveland. But instead, we get a guy whose track record is really, really good in James Saxon. These are some of the running backs that he has coached: Priest Holmes, Larry Johnson, Ricky Williams, Ronnie Brown, Adrian Peterson, Le'Veon Bell, D'Angelo Williams, and then James Conner this last year. And I put together a piece a little while ago, right after the hiring was announced. When it was reported. Putting together the numbers that his running backs have put up, and he has some of the kind of the iconic running back performances. You've got the 3-year run of Priest Holmes at the early 2000, 1500, 1600, 1400. Then you've got the two 1700 yard pluses of Larry Johnson with the Chiefs. You had the Ronnie Brown and Ricky Williams combining for 1500 yards. Ricky Williams, right? Oh, and then the next year they combined for 1,700 yards. You have Adrian Peterson's 2,000-yard season. You have Le'Veon Bell and his 1,300, his 1,200, his 1,200. And then in Bell's absence, James Conner even going for 973 yards. Here's kind of the thing that's put together. So if you add two fullback Pro Bowl seasons by Tony Richardson with the Chiefs, that makes – in, I think, 19 years that he's been a running backs coach, 14 Pro Bowl selections and 7 All-Pro seasons by his players. And they some of the performances have been the best at the position. And here's this. His leading rusher has averaged nearly 1,200 yards a season. That's on average over 19 years, which just that average would rank as the seventh best single season mark in Cardinals history. These are impressive numbers. These are things that should get you excited. And when you combine his success, so having a guy like David Johnson work with him should work wonders. In addition to, let's meld that with the offensive philosophy of Cliff Kingsbury, where he has gotten some big running back seasons as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, you know, you have guys that's what has impressed me with the build of this staff is that it's guys that have been successful in a lot of different ways and in schemes. And so basically what it does is it creates competition, it creates guys pushing each other to implement their schemes. Now, obviously that can backfire if people think that their way is the right way, but what it does is, you know, Saxon has been successful, as Jess just read off, basically for the last 20 years, and those are all differing schemes, differing personnel, differing back types. You know, I went over Kugler, we went over Clements. So when you kind of create this coaching staff on offense, it's a lot different than what they did on defense. Like I said, Vance Joseph, outside of Billy Davis, was basically said like, hey, bring in the staff you want. Offensively, outside of Spadaville or whatever the guy's name was at Texas State, you didn't hear much of Kingsbury guys outside of the wide receiver coach. But you didn't hear much of Kingsbury guys in terms of, oh, well, they're going to bring in this guy or this guy. What they're doing is they're bringing in guys that have been successful in different situations in the NFL. This is basically saying, like, look, in the end, Kliff is the guy that's going to run the offense, but we're going to surround him with coaches who have been successful in a variety of ways and in a variety of systems to be sounding boards, to be voices in the room every week in and week out when you're creating game plans.
On the other guy that we haven't talked about yet is Jeff Rogers, the one coordinator to return. Jeff Rogers comes back as special teams coordinator. The Cardinals basically have their core special teams guys in place. Andy Lee returns. He's got 2 years left on his deal. Aaron Brewer's got 2 years left on his deal. They've got Zane Gonzalez under contract at kicker. Whether that's their answer, we'll have to wait and see. But Rogers did do some good things with special teams. There were obviously not everything was great. The kicking game was not great. They still did not get great production in the return game, but their coverage was much better. And if you want to look at some of the numbers, just let's look at Zeke Turner. Now, again, this is the numbers that were that are based on the coach's film review. I think what the NFL stat was is that Zeke Turner, undrafted rookie out of Washington, that he was tied for the league lead in special teams solo tackles with 13. This number is crazy. The Cardinals credited him with a total of 22 special teams tackles, 16 of which were solo tackles. And they had 6 players with at least 8 special teams tackles this past year. Coverage was obviously much better. And this includes, so this was from 3 rookies as well. So they got Zeke Turner with 22. They got Chase Edmonds with 9. And Dennis Gardick, another solid undrafted pickup, with 8 special teams tackles, as well as Derek Coleman at fullback with 8. Joe Walker, a linebacker, they picked up during the season with another 8. And Rudy Ford with 8 as well. You have to like what they did. There was no reason to change over. And if Rogers was under contract still, which he probably was, I was very wise of Kingsbury to say, hey, there's nothing wrong with this unit. Let's keep it that way. In addition to the part where I'm sure that was highly suggested by Steve Keim, and especially with the amount of coaches the Cardinals are paying this year who aren't on their staff.
Yeah. And you know, out of all the bad from 2018, the only real good was the fact that the special teams improved leaps and bounds. So, you know, Amos Jones is now Tampa Bay's problem, right? So
no, he's not.
Oh, that's right.
So I came to realize Amos was not Arian's best guy. That was Keith Armstrong.
Right.
Because he hired Armstrong out of Atlanta, and he was the guy that he wanted Cardinals to hire for head coach. But Amos was one of his other guys. He was fiercely loyal, but ultimately he wasn't his one guy.
Yeah. So when you look at it, I mean, it, like you said, outside of the fact that they're paying a bunch of people to not be Arizona Cardinals coaches anymore, it also makes sense from a success standpoint, because it was literally the only redeeming quality in terms of the 3 phases of the NFL game last year for the Cardinals.
Oh, let me butt in for a second. This just hit Twitter. Rich Goslin, who does the special teams rankings every year, the Cardinals were last or dead last or second to last each of the last few years, really near the bottom. They come in number 5 for 2018. Yeah.
So again, I mean, everything pointing to that just made the most sense. That, you know, it if it's a long-term thing or whatever, we'll see. I mean, Justin and I won't complain if it is, obviously. But obviously, in the same way, they just had to, because they didn't really have a lot of choices at this point. I mean, you know, we've talked about everything else that Kingsbury doesn't have access to, which is all true and all that's all correct, but you know, if you've got a successful unit on the team, why break it up at that point?
Exactly. Now, we don't know who is assistant special team. They're almost all staffs of assistant special teams guys. And there's a couple of things still left. And what's kind of interesting is that at least for now, it appears that this staff might have fewer coaches on it than Wilkes or Arians. And I get the impression that part of that may be in part because of the financial commitment that they made to what was essentially all a brand new staff a year ago, and that they will be paying for at least another year. Here are the positions that we know are not filled. There is no assistant head coach named. Whether they're going to go without one, which would be weird. There is no run game coordinator listed yet. There's no offensive quality control. These tend to be smaller names. That there's no defensive line coach at that. There's no strength and conditioning coach. And then you figure that with the linebackers, because they've got two secondary coaches. They've got the cornerbacks coach, Greg Williams, and the secondary in terms of defensive backs overall, Marcus Robertson. They've got Billy Davis for all the linebackers. They don't have anyone for defensive line, especially in a 3-4. You typically have two linebackers coaches, and you don't have anyone else on offense except for that's an assistant other than the Natkins for the offensive line. So it's interesting that it's Senior Bowl weekend. They don't have a full coaching staff yet, or at least have not announced it. And the report that we're hearing from the radio is that their major hires are done. Who's going to be the run game coordinator? I thought, you know, with the Hugh Jackson role, the that kind of make everyone go crazy. I thought in the right setting, obviously he's gone through a few, he's had some success. He's was well respected a lot around the league before of Cleveland. But I thought maybe if they didn't, like, after we've heard the news that they weren't going to go with an offensive coordinator, that maybe Hugh would end up being the guy that they hire as run game coordinator / assistant head coach, because he's worked with quarterbacks, he's worked with running games, and he's been a run game coordinator before. So he's been a running backs coach as well. But with the idea that there's no more major hires, Hugh Jackson would qualify as one of those. So it's going to be interesting. Is like, are they going to have an assistant head coach? Who's that going to be? Because typically that's a guy that has a little bit of clout on the team, and you typically would be someone who's been either on someone's staff for a while, so he'd either a veteran coach or has been on a particular staff multiple years, which we don't have.
Right, and so when it's all kind of cooked, when it's all said and done, I think there'll be probably up to 5 more hires, but it's going to be, I don't think any of the names, unless you're just like a super NFL college coaching nerd, I don't think anybody's going to know who these people are.
And that seems weird considering a couple of things. So basically considering maybe they're going to dole out those extra titles, but let's be honest. In the coaching world, titles do matter, because with those titles comes extra money, essentially. They're not paying technically an offensive coordinator. I think obviously that Clements is going to be someone that's, I don't know how the salary structure. That's the one thing, is that with assistants, those numbers we never hear about overall. But they have nice experience in Clements, in Kugler, and in Saxon. And then on the defensive side of the ball, they've got Billy Davis. They've got Vance Joseph, who's not super experienced as a DC. In fact, Billy Davis has more experience as a DC than Joseph does. Let's be honest. The secondary coaches, those are Vance Joseph's guys. So they're still, I'm thinking, well, who's going to be those guys? Because you'd figure they might add some more experience, but it doesn't look like it, right?
No, it really doesn't. I mean, unless their staffs are just going to be all Saints, Chiefs, Rams, and Patriots guys. I mean, that. So unless it's going to be all those guys that are coming off of contracts, and I'm not saying it is. And so, yeah, I mean, it seems like they've kind of cooked the team, so to speak, and they're just it's kind of, you know, the outside decorations at this point. It's stuff that doesn't change much, but it just kind of adds to what is already put together.
And with that, we'll wrap this. We kind of talked about the whole coaching staff that we know of right now. We'll wrap up this show. I think what we'll do in terms of the weeks to come, obviously, we're at the end of January. We can probably have a show next week where we'll talk about the Senior Bowl. We'll talk about Senior Bowl standouts, and that will be more of a case where Seth will give us some more of the information. We'll talk about Combine, and what's going to be different this offseason as it was last offseason is we're going to have to think. We don't know what type of players are going to fit exactly. So we've got Senior Bowl, we've got the Combine coming up, and then we're going to prep for free agency where we'll kind of hit the Cardinals' needs, potential targets out there and stuff like that. But on behalf of this edition of episode 218 of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour Cardinals talk on the web, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We'll be back again soon. Thank you for listening as always. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.